I've decided to starting these in quite a strange way. And it's quite unexpected,
Right.
which is on brand, unknown for the unexpected. And that is generally to start with what I see of Toby Southgate if I was to look at him as he was a LinkedIn profile. Okay, so I see a man that began his career at a Scottish-based business. He spent 10 years developing that thing in the UK and the US, potentially another region, but we'll come on to that. It was branding focused. It was a branding design-led business.
True,
Okay.
so far.
Okay. And then he left to go to Mad Men land into advertising. And now sits here as a global CEO of a Swedish-based advertising business.
Swedish born.
Swedish-born
Yes.
advertising business, F&B. I've given up trying to pronounce that, but
Don't worry.
I'll let you do that in a moment. That's what I see as a profile. But that's not why we're here. We're here to hear about you as a human being. So, Toby Southgate, global CEO of Forsman and Bodenfors.
Not bad.
Nearly. That
Not
was
bad.
close. Who was the first person that ever made you feel like you had talent?
Well, firstly, I'm disappointed I'm not getting the fish or rat question, because that's what I'm here
Oh,
for.
I've changed it.
I know. Well, look, it's fine. The look that you've got the cliche answers, right? Family, parents, one of my grandfathers particularly probably would be the truest answer. And ultimately, none of it really matters because you're just a tiny human being trying to work out what's good and interesting for you. And as long as you've got some people that look after you and put you as a human being first, your development, your progress, and that, you know, also that they love you unconditionally, then you're going to feel pretty safe and secure. And I'm always aware that that's a privilege that I have, you have, most people in this industry have, honestly, and an awful lot of human beings don't. So starting with that is really important. Like, we all come from a place of, we all had a pretty good head start, I think. And so that's really important. Like, I carry all of that forward when I think about what I do day to day, how we can make our business better, we can make our clients' businesses better, and how we can reflect the fact that, you know, we're here to inspire and bring ideas to life, and that's a creative endeavor that is deeply human-centered. We all need inspiration and motivation, and we all need to believe that someone's looking out for us and that we've got something that's valuable, right? I think that's a sort of common thread through any of my discussions about leadership. Like, how do we help people, and how do we make their lives a little bit better too? Because we all got pretty lucky.
So you're not going with a cliche to say your family were the people to kind of make you feel talent. Well, you are, you're honoring that. I feel like there must have been a moment, you know, when you and I had a conversation, you started in investment banking, right? Isn't that how this
Epic
began?
failure. I did. But that's also it ties to my granddad a little bit, actually, because if I'd had my wishes always, I probably would have worked a little bit harder as a teenager to understand whether or not this thing called art school required you to be good at drawing. Someone convinced me that that was necessary. And I now know it's not true. And I was shit at drawing. But I loved doing loads of other stuff that was sort of vaguely connected to art and creativity. I loved writing. I loved using, and now I'm really aging myself, I loved using Letra sets to make signs and stuff in the house. But no one ever sort of nurtured that. And my granddad's great success with me and our whole family was that he had this sort of condition. He made a bit of money at the end of his life, very working class all the way through. But towards the end of his life, he made a bit of money. And that was because he trained himself as an accountant and ended up as a finance director and ended up doing some, you know, small cap M&A work and built and sold a couple of companies, which sounds really grand if you think of it through the lens of technology in today's world. But, you know, 40 years ago, it wasn't grand. You know, it was just enough money to pay off a mortgage and ask my mum a couple of questions about whether she wanted a little bit now or some when he died and all that stuff. And one of his things was, I can support the boys, I had two younger brothers, through their education, as long as I have a bit of a voice in what they do. So when I went to university, desperate to do an arty subject like English or history or ideally art, but that was definitely not allowed. The answer was, I'll do that, I can definitely help. but you've got to do a real subject, like economics, accounting, business studies, something like that, real subject to ground you in business. Because that's, I think, what he wished he'd been able to do when he was late teens, 20s, and said he went to war. And so I did. I went to Edinburgh. I did economics. I did the bare minimum of economics. I was a terrible student of economics. I was a terrible student generally. But because I did economics and as much history of art, history of architecture, history as I could, I was recruited by the milk rounds into an investment bank. And because everyone else on my course wanted to work in an investment bank, when I got the offer, I did it. And I mean, I didn't like anything about it except for the starting salary. And it took me a very long time to earn as much money. But I probably decided within a week that it wasn't for me. And a lot of that had to do with me going to see my granddad, telling him what I was doing, and assuming that he'd be so happy. And instead, he said, gave me a big hug, just chat about the job. And before I could say anything about it, he said two things. He said, one, you've put on a bit of timber, right? Which, kind of an inevitable byproduct of that job at that time. And he said, you do realize actually what you're doing is gambling with my pension.
Wow.
And that was pretty grounding. I had no idea that's actually what we're doing. Like, it's numbers on screens. I didn't know what an investment bank did. I just got offered a job and I was happy to have a job and I wanted to earn money and get ahead and pay some people back and look after myself a little bit. And that was the beginning of needing to find something else. Like, I hated the job and the person that I wanted to be most proud of it told me really what it was. And so I went back to Edinburgh. I went back to a company that I had worked at part-time as a student, which was a news publishing business that sold like a subscription-based newsletter, weirdly, about Russian business news. There's a whole story about that.
Okay.
But it was a brilliant grounding in how to use early-stage internet PDFs delivered overnight by a program called WinFax and an ACT database by Semantic to build relationships with people and sell stuff. And because it was vaguely digital, after doing that job for a couple of years, it was a tiny company, 12 people or something, this magical thing called an agency phoned me and said, almost to the word, we're building an internet division. We hear you know a little bit about the internet. We need someone to come and help. And it was a design and brand agency. They were starting a unit called something.com, which tells you again exactly when it was. Yeah. And they just had people, it was the time. It was the Wild West. Right? Yeah. We need a website. Great. How much have you got? £1 million. Okay, fine. Great. Now, we need some animated idents. How many do you need? I don't know. 10? I think you need 50. Okay, we'll have 50.
£1 million.
Right, exactly. And it was just a brilliant... I sort of found all these kids that had been to art school, and I could wear jeans and trainers at work. And you could go to the pub on a Friday and have a couple of pints, and everybody was mates. And it felt collegiate and familial and like just a cool place to work with cool people. So that was the beginning, like total accident. Wow. I wish I knew about the world of marketing when I was a teenager. I might have ended up doing something quite different, but the route in was totally accidental and really fortunate. Like, again, back to that, it's a bit privileged too, like totally lucky.
Yeah.
I didn't like banking, so I had to go and find something else, and I went to a place I was comfortable. Then something else happened. So yeah, it's like a... I think we've got to try and nurture that sometimes as well.
Yeah.
Accidental decisions, if you're prepared for them, are sometimes the biggest opportunities.
What was different about you then? So, I mean, I get this unique kind of blend of art and economics, which is rare. And I think at that time, those worlds weren't very well known. Marketing, you'd have to stumble across it to know really what it was all about. Take me through, what was it about you that made you special in that place? Because you ended up becoming a leader within that business, and I believe they sold, right? You sold that business 10 years later.
No. There were two... I did two independent agencies.
Okay.
One of which I left to join a competitor, frankly, but the competitor had wild ambition and was an opportunity to go and work in the US. There was a guy who founded and built an agency, but doing really well, very design-focused. And he said, I've got some money. I want to do something that no one from Scotland has ever done. I'm not going to open an office in London. I want to do it in New York. And I need some help. And he's a creative, a purist designer, brilliant, still runs a great business. It's been through 3 or 4 iterations.
Wow.
And I couldn't turn it down. It was a wrench to leave. I'd been 3 years in the first agency that hired me, and I loved the people, but it was a bit of a weird business, right? In the end, it folded. The pension fund was a bit, there were some dodgy elements, right? Classic indie agency stuff in the 90s, I guess. But I went on this other journey, went to New York, and that just opened my eyes. I'd never been to the States when I accepted the job.
Wow.
And my now wife, very fortunately, then girlfriend, was living in Dubai. And for a while, I've been trying to get a job in Dubai or convince my agency to open in Dubai. So I had to phone her and tell her, great news, I've been offered a job. Less good news, it's in New York, which is the opposite direction. Yeah. But it was that moment when I was, and I want you to come, and I know that means a lot. And so, yeah, this probably is like the conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, like, I'm fortunate that she said yes and came on the adventure. She'd also never been to the States.
Wow.
So that was quite wild.
How did you land there? What was your strategy?
Well, the guy I worked with and for, Mark, he did the rare thing that a founder should do this more often. Hmm. He just opened his book, said, this is the business. And whatever you read or whatever you know, whatever you've seen, this is the business, right? And this is how much money we make. You can talk to the accountant. This is how we work. And it was super pure, right? This was a brilliant and in the best way, traditional brand identity design business. And the first mission was, I've got £1 million and we can spend that over a year without impacting the core business to start in New York. And I don't know anything else about it. I know roughly where I'd like to be. I'd like to be in Chelsea or Soho. I don't know how we hire people. I don't know how we pay people. I don't know how we hire an office. I don't know how we lease space. I don't know how we get a photocopier. I don't know anything. I don't know where to get furniture. So go, spend a few weeks, just to see if you think we can do it. And if you think we can't, and we work over 3 or 6 months and realize it's just too much, then just come back and you can do the job here. We'll give you another job, like you'd be MD or something. So it was too good to be true. And I did it, and it turned out that we could do it, and it actually wasn't that hard. Find some space, talk to some people, join up with some interesting, we did a lot of work at the beginning with the Chambers of Commerce, really eager to push young, growing, energetic businesses from the UK into the US. And we lucked out with a couple of things. We put ourselves in stupid positions. We rented this space in a big factory building converted. Stella McCartney moved in downstairs. So we decided that we should probably do some work in fashion. And we landed a couple of fashion briefs. A great British clothing brand, Oliver Spencer, was going to the US for Fashion Week and he needed some help. And so we hired a person in London that he'd worked with and ended up acquiring an agency as a result of that. And it just went slightly gangbusters just by being in the right place and being naive enough to think that what we've got is good. And that means if we stand behind it, someone will like it too. And then, 3 or 4 projects in a relatively small business, everything changes. And then we landed this huge project, a real estate development project in Chicago. And that transformed everything. Within, I think, 18 months, the US business was bigger than the UK business. Wow. And we'd gotten to this point of deciding, what are we going to do next? And we never fell out about it, but it really, I wanted to do more. I was 29, maybe. And I wanted to do it again. I was like, let's go to the Middle East. Let's go to Hong Kong. Let's explore Latin America. And Mark, the founder, owner, it was his business. And he was like, this is cool. I'm into this. Why would we stress ourselves out and do it again? And so by that time, it was just a moment great. We could shake hands. We had a brilliant ride. We're still mates. And I had seen this other thing, this is the world now, and what are these big companies maybe I should go and talk to WPP or Omnicom, and what can I do in those worlds? And that's what took me to, two small agencies, then a really big agency comparatively, but inside WPP, so in a massive holding company. And then I did 10 years there, Brand Union. Then I went to McCann. That was the branding to advertising jump, which... That was the beginning question, I think.
It was. I mean, thank you. Yeah. And that's given so much context. Brand Union. So obviously they've looked at you and gone, wow, this guy understands. I mean, he's an entrepreneur who understands the raw basics of a business and also how to sell to Stella McCartney. You can imagine the package that they're hiring with this person. The 10 years there, I just want to get a moment. When were you happiest then in that 10 years?
That's a great question. Honestly, at the very beginning, and it was because for the first 2 or 3 years, because they, you know, I got passed around in WPP. Mm. I went to WPP because they had a really great central talent function. Mm. I don't know if it still exists, but I got lots of introductions because it did look quite good. Like, there's a 28-year-old kid. He's never really worked in a big agency, but he's done some really interesting things, and we don't really know where to put him because I'm, you know, I was definitely not like a, you know, an Ogilvy graduate account management training program person. And I came across some really they had this program at the time called the Fellowship. I was way too old to apply for it, but I thought, that's really interesting. And there were some brilliant people that came through that as well, run by a guy called John Steele, who's just like a guru and a genius to anyone that ever touched the WPP Fellowship program or recruitment about that time. Anyway, so I got offered lots of things, and most of them really sucked. And they were like, "We'd love you to come to, we'd love you to come to Agency X, big network X, and be a senior account manager on the IBM team." And I'm like, "Are you fucking kidding? Like, what? Why would I do that? I'm running a $10 million business." Oh, but you have to learn. And so I had all these conversations that were ultimately very frustrating with big agencies. Until this weird thing that looked much more like the agency I was in, it was called Enterprise IG at the time. It was becoming Brand Union. It was one of the big WPP brand design agencies, like Landor, Brand Union, and Fitch were the three big ones. And they said, "We don't know how to do this, but we've just won a project with the government of Abu Dhabi, and our CEO in the Middle East needs to put an office there. Would you do it?" And that, for me, was like, fuck yes. Yeah. Like, I have no idea what you do, really. It must be a bit like what I've done here, but that, I can do that. Like, that's starting something with a client, even better than we had with Third Eye in New York, and a great supportive leadership group who sort of brought me into the secret of, like, the CEO globally at the time is this guy, Simon Bolton. He'd been around the block in WPP. He'd been at FCB on the West Coast when they were doing really interesting work. And he was a good guide and navigator, and he matched me up with a regional CEO who was a real entrepreneur, South African guy, hungry, energetic. He'd taken himself there from SA because he thought Dubai would be interesting, and just grown it, like smashed it from nowhere. And that I was, again, felt like I'd found a few people that I could go on this journey with. So, and that was it. I did 2.5 years in the Middle East. I went to New York for a year because they knew I'd been there and they had a problem and they asked me to go and fix it. Came and ran London, which was like a succession management issue. They bought a lot of agencies, folded them in. So I was, then I'm, what am I, early 30s, and I'm talking to guys in their 60s who'd sold their agencies to WPP and were needing to define their exits elegantly as possible. What did I do? Then I went back to the US and I became global CEO eventually. So that the journey was great because I had support and a group of people that made a big difference. And I think that's it. Like, it's a crew. Like, there were 120,000 people in WPP, but my 15 or 20 or 30 people, that was like close. It was a team and it felt really good. But the beginning bit was the best because it was the easiest brief. Like, I know how to do that.
So that's the bit that you feel like you're, I always say, like, you're, you know, you're white knuckling, but you're enjoying it so much. Time's going by so quickly.
Yeah.
For you, that's when it's the beginning. It's almost like, Can you imagine if we could do this thing? It's unobtainable, not obvious, undefined kind of exploring, but with the right people. So that's, and then it sounds like you get to a point of, I mean, it's not consistent because you were there for 10 years and then previously even longer at the other one, or for a lengthy amount of time. But does it get to a point for you where you're like, all right, we've done all the things now. Mm. What's the next challenge?
It definitely felt like that at the end of Brand Union. Mm. My last 12 months... that was, I guess, going into 2016, essentially, when, you know, WPP was starting to slow a little bit. There were some questions about, you know, what's coming next for WPP. Mm. And they were starting to align things internally into bigger groups. And that strategy continues today. They hadn't moved very fast, but the conversations were beginning to happen. And that was definitely a moment of like, okay, now when I'm uncertain what that next step could be, and I don't immediately see that, you know, either my people are with me or for me, and by the way, they have their own uncertainties. That was a moment, okay, it's time to think more laterally about the next step. Because it's really, it was 10 years or nearly 10 years at Brand Union, and therefore nearly 10 with WPP in one agency, but in three regions, and it felt like five different jobs because it genuinely was. Yeah. You know, it was build a little office, run a regional P&L, go and fix a messy integration in New York, come back to London, succession, leadership and management, and then ultimately run the whole thing. Yeah. And that was a tiny but global business and messy, but also singularly, one global brand, but I know 26 offices at one point.
Yeah.
And some of them were tiny, and that's really, really difficult. Really difficult. There's no playbook for that. And so, yeah, it had come to a point where something's going to need to change. Yeah. And even though I was CEO, we'd been aligned with a couple of other, we'd already been aligned with Fitch, and they made an acquisition of a sort of CX business that was also aligned under this same leader. And it just felt like, something's going to get squashed here. And so maybe it is time. And I think it was also a little bit of a push, it's going to be a bit slow for you, Toby, for a couple of years. And I didn't really want to move inside WPP, and nor did I desperately want to work in an advertising agency. We'll probably talk about that in a minute. But I thought if I'm going to go and work in one, I might as well find the best people I can doing the most interesting things that is less advertising in terms of, in its most precious definition, and more about brands, branding, creativity at its core. And I found a group of people that wanted to do that or were already doing that, truthfully.
Where?
That was McCann Well Group.
Okay.
Yeah. With some really unexpected people running it.
So this was the thing that brought you into where you are now. Mm. How was that position? How are they managing? Why would somebody from a branding background be of interest to McCann at that time? So you're McCann Well Group, you've got a bunch of people that you can hire people from. And the role that you did was a chief growth
officer. Yeah, chief growth officer.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So who are they weighing you up against right now? Who are the obvious hires that McCann Well Group could make for that role?
I think it's good fortune. I'm pretty sure the only reason I got into a conversation about it in the first place was that they were looking actually for a CMO.
Ah, okay.
They'd moved a brilliant new business guy or a brilliant guy from a new business role into a bigger leadership position. It was a guy called Alex Lubar who left New York, came to London to take over McCann London. And he was part of this new era of people that were, the internal mission was take McCann World Group from being the worst big network to the best. And they achieved that. And I was along for the second half or the two thirds of the ride. I definitely wasn't there at the beginning, but you could see those people and the energy they had. And the challenge that they hit in replacing Alex in the role he had was there aren't too many people like Alex, but the obvious place to look is all the new business people at all the other networks. And they're a different kind of person to me. And I make no judgment about them. Sometimes that's what's needed. But for that group of people at that moment in time, they didn't feel good. They didn't find their person. And my approach to it was, well, I can't do that. So when the headhunter called me about it three or four times, I said, that's not my job. I'm not a CMO in an ad agency. And no, it's not just an ad agency. They've also got these other things, and it's like a group now and blah, blah, blah. And in the end, they just said, look, you don't be a fucking idiot. Come and see these people and tell them how you think you would do the job or a job. Forget what it's called. And that was the magic in it. Because they were looking for someone that they couldn't find to replace someone who was sort of irreplaceable, given the way he'd done the job. And their expectations were being missed. So they met someone different and the story became different. And they offered me the job because I wasn't prepared to or able to do things the way that they thought they needed them done. But I could show them a couple of alternative ways to do it, which was all about bringing capabilities together, integrating skills on client teams, working at the world group level, not the agency level, putting the client needs first, thinking about the business problem and how we solve it using creativity. And I sort of got that literally from going up into the office. It's a human, there's a reason why Mad Men chose McCann, right? It was, as they used to say, the worst big network by the time that this new crew of people were given all their jobs and put together to turn it around. And you could sense that there was this unifying mission. It was all over the walls. There were these posters. That's the last thing I expected to see in a big in McCann's global HQ was a series of posters. Creativity is the only way to survive. And a real belief that the answer was in the ideas. It's not what I expected. I thought the answer would be in the scale and creative distribution and big campaigns. But they just bled this mantra, and it was a new team that had done it. And so I thought, well, this is it. Like, I can talk about how businesses use creativity to grow. And then we just put skills together and there's more business to be won. So the whole interview, or the final interview, ended up being something like, you know, I would bet that we could grow the top 10 clients in this business faster than we can win $100 million of new clients. And that's kind of equivalent. Like, it was a $2 billion business, 20,000 people, top 10 clients were, let's say, 50% of it. You don't have to work too hard to stitch things together. And that's the thing that most big networks are still trying to do, I think.
I was about to ask you, what was the best thing that you did there? Because you were there for how long?
4 years.
4 years?
Yeah, yeah, 4 years.
If you could point to it, it sounds like that was the thing. But if you were to point to one thing that went, that is the definition of my time there, or I want to be defined by this thing that I did there, what would you point to in that 4 years?
Like, a chart, the galaxy chart, like put the client in the middle and all the services around the outside, and it doesn't matter what the services are called. They could be agency brands or marketing competences. But if you're really focused on understanding the client's problem and using all the skills you have to solve it, you've got a far better chance of building a great relationship than you have going doing the dance of a, you know, big campaign pitch with 12 other agencies. For one, by the way, for one discipline. There aren't as many big integrated pitches, there never were, as people like to imagine.
Okay, I want to get into now. So Stagwell, what the bloody hell is this thing, right? So you get knocked, someone knocks on your door. It's called Forsman and Bowden Fors, which from what I know, again, I'm going to do what I see from, you know, from my perspective. I know that there is a company called F&B. They did Van Damme Epic Split for Volvo Trucks. That's all I know about them. Then you've got Stagwell, this big thing where there was some kind of investment from Microsoft. There's a man called Mark Penn who I think runs it. I believe it used to be some sort of venture capital fund. They bought, or they own, I think, Anomaly, 72 and Sunny, and who I believe used to exist in a company called MDC. But they're all still their own unique and separate brands. A lot of them are quite brand creative-led advertising agencies, very US-focused. F&B is a Swedish-born business, and you're the global CEO. That's all I know. So how was this?
Most of that is true, Ollie. Again.
Okay. How would you describe Stagwell then? What is, who are Stagwell? What are they? What's their kind of vision and mission?
Well, you talked about some of it. Like Stagwell, what Stagwell was and what it is becoming is most of the reason why I joined. What it was, Stagwell in its first iteration, was a described private equity vehicle investing in marketing technology. And it was started by Mark Penn when he left Microsoft. And I'd come across Mark at he built and ran a PR agency that he sold to WPP. He became the CEO of Burson Marsteller. He's a political, governmental research pollster guy by trade and training. He ran Bill Clinton's election campaign. And is a massive brain, like a super strategist, a brilliant thinker on big business and cultural issues. Like, he understands people and how they work. And I was fascinated, but hadn't really joined the dots. When he left Microsoft, he set up this thing called Stagwell, private equity investing in MarTech. And then everyone knew that MDC Partners, which was the holding company that had bought first Crispin, but also Anomaly 72, Donor, Forsman and Bowden Fors, and a whole bunch of other agencies over time, was having a very challenging time, right? They were under SEC investigation. They had overreached, overborrowed to continue growing. And, you know, the thing was either up for sale or about to get ripped up. And that was like open knowledge and well covered. And all the holding companies, well, everyone had been swimming around it a little bit because unquestionably MDC had bought some brilliant agencies and had really focused on founder leaders. Like Carl still runs Anomaly, right? David DeMuth still runs Donor. And Boiler is the chair of the Constellation, which is now in, you know, a big part of Stagwell. So there was something really interesting in what MDC had done, but somehow they'd lost the plot a little bit and they needed some help. They didn't get acquired outright, but somewhere along the line, Mark Stagwell acquired a big chunk and Mark started to take, Mark ran the business as CEO. as well as running Stagwell. And so clearly something was going to happen. Right? He didn't buy the thing outright, but still in public ownership, running MDC, he started to sort out all the mess pre-COVID. And it was, I think, a bit of an operational mess. Right? Easy to Google that and find out some of the stories. But I was fascinated by what he might do with it, because I could see someone whose strategy and thinking is unimpeachable, who really does have a plan, and who really does understand also the needs of contemporary marketing. He was a big client at Microsoft, and therefore is very well educated in taking a position on what modern marketing needs to thrive and succeed. And that's the Stagwell promise, right? It's about a new holding company model built for the new marketer.
I just want to stand on that little stand store on that thing. How? So what is it not?
It's not a big legacy TV and out-of-home media-led, creatively-led network with a media agency on the side.
Why is that a bad thing?
Can be a great thing, but it's an easier thing to achieve greatness if you've got one of each of those things, not several. And I think with no baggage, no legacy, a relative standing start, you know, Stagwell itself, original Stagwell is only, now must be 6 or 7 years old. Mark took the investment in MDC, I guess, before COVID, so 2018, maybe 2019. And the merger happened that created new Stagwell, MDC and Stagwell Private Equity coming together in 2021, exactly when I started. And that means everything we do, back to that galaxy chart, like my favorite times or favorite achievement at World Group, back to the galaxy chart, that's what Stagwell is everywhere. Like the language about collaboration, client centricity, integrated capabilities, what do clients want? Mm-hmm. And we pull from our galaxy of resources the things that they need. We're not trying to sell them something because we've got it. And that is really interesting, because all the founders and all the leaders of all the agencies in the group, and it's increasingly neatly organized, have either bought into that story or joined because of that story, or been put in leadership positions because they can help tell that story. And that's the thing that I think is really, at the moment and over the last nearly 3 years for me now, that's the thing that drives us all forward. And, you know, we're sat here now 500 yards from the new Stagwell EMEA headquarters, where we're physically together.
If all the things go well, in 12 months' time from now, what will be different about Stagwell, particularly in EMEA?
Oh, easy. More people here would understand some of the story that I've just told. And as a result of that, and because of that, the agencies in the group that are represented in this part of the world will be leading the charge, leading the story, growing in profile, doing more great work, and keeping things exciting for all of our people.
Where do you want to win business? Where is the group focused on winning business? So I know I had this thing in my head, but maybe it's not true, that there is a performance marketing lean versus, or I guess a perception externally could be this. Mm-hmm. Is Stagwell more interested in performance marketing than they are creative brand agency-led work? Or is that is there something happening that will mean those two things are stitched together in quite a natural way? I say that because I don't know of any holding groups that have managed to do that successfully. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to know if that's a direction that Stagwell are taking.
It's definitely a direction.
How does that look?
It looks like leaders aligned behind the group promise, right? The commitment to be the holding company that transforms marketing. And I don't know if humility is the right word, it's probably not, but the comfort in understanding that for some clients, sometimes they're going to need and want a creative agency to lead.
Yeah.
And depends on the needs in the business at the time, depends on leadership. And in that environment, we've got some pretty great creative agencies, very good, very powerful, creatively led businesses, 72, Anomaly, yeah. Donor, Forshman, Crispin. And these are great brands with amazing people, and most of them, all of them actually, without the historic legacy scale and structure of a traditional big creative network. That looks really powerful if you can then attach it to a media offering that's very tech and data driven, a suite of software services and products that are being developed for the world of AI and the cloud. Mm. Stagwell Marketing Cloud is a big part of the business. And these people are sitting around the table together. I mean, the way that Mark orchestrates this group as a pretty significant company now, like whatever it is, 14,000 people, $2.5 billion in revenue. Like, the leaders of these companies are talking every week. And it doesn't feel forced. And it's not a chore. And we all kind of like each other. So that's a really important part of it. Like, I think the superpower is we're doing some amazing things already in the market where we're biggest and have greatest scale. Like, most of the business, 80% of the business is America's. Mm-hmm. And the story's fairly well known, but still new. Company's still not 3 years old. And so in this part of the world where we're a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the market and the story is new and it's a little bit different and we can be flexible about how we build the teams to service the needs, there's something interesting in that. And yeah, in a year's time, more people aware of it, coming to engage with us to find out more about it, and agencies leading the dialogue with existing and new clients based on their needs.
There's definitely a curiosity in the market. When I speak to leaders within design, creative, whatever agencies, media agencies, they always turn around to me and say, what's going on with Stagwell? And I think there is a, like you mentioned, holding group frustration, whether you're a publicist, WPP, one of these bigger groups, where they are still figuring out the way forward. Yeah. And it feels like there's this grass is greener viewpoint looking at Stagwell going, is it smoother over there? Do I feel like, you know, will I be able to... The biggest thing I get from everybody is, are they aligned on what their ambition is? Mm-hmm. Do they all agree on what the ambition of the agency group is? And then the second thing, are they willing to give me, the leader coming into that business, the right level of autonomy to achieve my role? Because I can't count on my hands how many CEOs I've spoken to that aren't CEOs. They're mouthpieces for people around a table on a FTSE 100 company, right? So I think Stagwell could be in a really neat position where they could turn around and say, we're going to win the best talent because we're going to trust them to do the job that we know that they can do.
Yeah.
And I think if that's one message that can go out about Stagwell, that's really exciting. Mm. Is there an example of, and maybe you don't want to lead with a fully integrated account, but maybe you do, of the impact of that in the world? So is there an account where you can say that is a pure Stagwell account where the client's winning because of the way that we've integrated and circled our business around that client?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. I mean, I think there are things that are coming.
Okay.
And I think there, because I can speak publicly about Mandarin Oriental, which we won a year and a half or so ago as a result of a big pitch against big traditional networks. And I know why we won. We won because a creative agency, Forshman, and a media agency, Assembly, came together to completely, you know, build a completely integrated response. Mm. And the fruits of that labor are still ongoing. Like, we're only 9 months into the relationship, and we've done a couple of really interesting things, but the big splash is yet to come. The other very interesting thing about the proof points is, because we're still young, built a slightly different way, finding growth and getting to the massive kind of scale that a traditional big holding company would consider to be big, scaled, integrated, is actually just a little bit easier for us, because 10 to 50 million looks huge. We're not looking for the 100 million plus. Mm-hmm. We'll get there. But building towards and building around the relationships that we already have in lots of the agencies, when they are connected and when everyone is aligned, as you said, on the sort of group proposition, that actually becomes quite easy. The organic growth story is really, really good. And our ability to sort of penetrate based on where we're strong already and then supplement because of that new positioning for the holding company, that's, I think, really powerful. That's where I think we'll see as many stories coming from as Stagwell wins, you know, pick your big global integrated account. Because again, I don't think those things are happening.
No. I want you to get your crystal ball out now.
Mm.
We're going to the future. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Hi there. What do you think is going to happen 2 years from now to this? I don't want to call it Adland. I want to call it the creative services industry.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, we're not going to call it Mad Men Land. And you be brutally honest as you can. Mm. Where do you think the winners are going to be and where are the losers going to be? If you were to predict 24 months.
Yeah, this is where you play it back to me in 24 months. Like, loser buys lunch. Look, no one likes doing this because no one likes being wrong. But I think being prepared to be wrong is probably half the battle, right? So I think in my little crystal ball on the world, I'm not going to attribute this quote, but it is kind of, it's a colleague, an esteemed colleague, who said that in a world where the value of data is going to zero, the value of creativity should go to infinity. And I think there's a regaining of the create, I'm glad you called it creative services. Like, the creative industries are a force for change and for good and for growth. That's been lost a little bit amongst all our, you know, messy language and uber competitive environment and trying to, you know, segment your services into micro slices so that if you're going to get fired for one thing, you still do seven other things over here. And all of it's nonsense, because the job of marketing and people working in and around marketing is to help brands and businesses grow and governments and people tell their stories and to connect with real people in the world and get them to give a shit about the things that you do. And I think if there's a return to that, or return to a belief in that focus, the inevitable consequences are that the shape of businesses in this space changes a little bit, because a lot of them are a bit too big, fat and happy. Mm-hmm. And that is not sustainable unless we're attractive to entry-level people. We're a great place to grow a career. We're a great place to come and, you know, find unusual opportunities to work with unusual people. And I don't know if we're as attractive as we used to be, any of us, in that environment. And the struggle for talent at that level is something that I really believe and hope can be solved through all the macro, you know, all AI headlines. AI is coming for 95% of your jobs. Sam Altman, no, it isn't. It really isn't. It's coming for a lot of them if you believe that creativity is flyers and business cards and insertions in the daily paper. Some of it is, but that's not the creativity that moves the world forward. Mm. And some of what's going to change is the sort of the obvious automation of almost anything that can be automated. But one thing that definitely can't is the human creative brain, the appetite to have a discussion and a debate about how you make a business better through marketing, through brand, through all of the things that we live and breathe day to day. So I think changing shape, more attractive to younger talent, mm-hmm. and probably a little bit thinner and narrower at the top.
Interesting. And if you were speaking to 21-year-old Toby, who's entering the industry now, you know, you've got this kind of, what would I think of the industry now if I was 21? I'd go like, do you guys do the TikToks and things for brands? Do you do those packaging for stuff that I buy? Like, I see some fashion brands doing some stuff. I think the pull for a 21-year-old to this industry would be, I can make stuff that does move the world and does have an impact in the world that I can speak to my mum about or my friends about. Mm. I still think that's there, this making things on a, you know, global scale that people can recognize. Mm. What advice would you give to that person? What would you say to 21-year-old Toby now entering the creative services industry? Mm. What would you say to him?
Firstly, don't worry about that mess up in the bank. Right, that, in 10 years you won't even think about it.
Yeah.
But probably most importantly, know that your voice is important. Right, and wherever you've come from, whatever you know about marketing, you know much more about it than you think. Like, that's the conversation with your mum and dad, right?
Yeah.
Like, they all know stuff that you've done. They might not know how you made it or what the brief said, but that's not important. Like, putting yourself in the shoes of real people in the real world. Mm. Actually is the job of most people in marketing, and the most frequently forgotten, most important thing in marketing. Know you have a voice and be, you know, go somewhere that you, where you're encouraged to use it, where you're given the chance to share and you're believed in.
Do you think that you can point to places where that's more likely to be and where there are, that'll be less likely to be?
Forsman and Bowden Falls.
We'll edit that bit out.
Well, I mean, I think it's places where that naturally a little bit smaller, a little bit more independently minded. Mm. They might be independent at the moment. I think that's going to, in a couple of years, you know, independent agencies are having a moment. That's a really good thing, as long as they can survive and remain special in the ways that some independent agencies are really special and different. Mm. But if you end up in a position where you're trying to become just like everybody else to keep growing, that's a bad thing. So the independent mind is really, really important. And I think those agencies, and it's why I took this job at Forshman. Like, this is an agency that knows what it's good at and it knows what it's not good at and is prepared to say that. You've got to find somewhere like that and that's not happy or willing to compromise easily.
It's really good advice. And I'm kind of looking at myself when I hear that advice as well, because it's so... I can understand how these companies become more and more integrated and do stand for less and less because they want to stand for more and more. I get it. Like, I'm scared, you know, running a recruitment company that's servicing major league creative agencies, design agencies, the odd brand here and there, to hire design talent, strategic talent, creative talent, you know.
Yep.
I worry going, well, is there always going to be a need for those people? And am I being stupid for not focusing on media? Media seems to be having a really good moment at the moment, and that, you know, it's making a lot of money, as is data. Mm. So for me, it's like, do we start looking at diversifying into those spaces? And suddenly I feel dilution happening and going, oh, but I can't write about that. I don't know anything about the data analytics industry. I don't really know that much about the media industry, to be honest. So I can see now as an agency brand going, oh, we probably should be doing some of that stuff, because it's the fear of what if we don't. And I think there's some kind of art in that, being curious about where you are exposed in terms of risk, but not doubling down on something so hard that dilutes what you originally stood for as a business. I think that's a really hard art to nail down.
I think it's hard, but I think it's more achievable if you focus on very basic, like, fundamental truths, right? You know, what's marketing for? Is creativity a power in marketing? If you understand that those two things are sort of two sides of the same coin, then you've got something that can be honorably defended, right? You can stick with that.
Yeah.
And actually everything, the more you segment and pull apart, the further away you get from the fundamental purpose of our existence in this industry.
Yeah.
And the more you can pull everything back into that.
Yeah. It's why our original proposition still stands. It's the one, you know, we always said Unknown isn't about sending you postmen or cheerleaders for creative director roles. It's about finding somebody that's 5 degrees away from where you currently are, because that's where the growth is. I'm not saying it's 180 degrees from where you are.
Yeah.
Just because you're at a creative agency doesn't mean you have to go and hire a data analyst. It can be a creative director that has an analytical brain.
Yes.
That's 5 degrees away from where you currently are, because then you are welcoming somebody in to bring a new perspective, to unlock a new opportunity. And I think that's the thing that I want to always hold on to, and that's the human truth, the industry truth, the growth truth, is if you arm the people within your business with what they're very good at doing and you keep on giving them the opportunities to do that thing and constantly keep one foot in where it could be going,
yeah,
then you're in a future-proofed place.
You are in a future-proofed place, and it gives you confidence not to compromise.
Yeah. It's good advice. What advice would you give me right now? It's kind of what I was asking you on the walk here.
I think...
Ooh, actually, I'll ask you a better question.
Yeah.
If you were a... I can't even say 20-something anymore. 30-something recruitment firm.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not getting any empathy from here.
Running a recruitment business that was operating within the creative services industry. Yeah. What advice would you give that person?
Keep fighting for the things that made you different in the first place. Companies still need those things, like the surprising candidate. That you've always said that, the 5 degrees off. If you set your target for the 180 degrees off, everyone's going to get let down.
Yeah.
But if you're prepared to go 5% either way, that takes trust. Like, it's a much more consultative relationship. You need to know what your clients are prepared to tolerate, and what they don't have, what they know they don't have, and what they don't know they don't have. And if that's where your 5% shift goes, I think that's really powerful. But compromising is going to be root to weakness.
It's really good advice. That's the bit that I'm trying to get, you know, in the good CEOs this morning, asking, what are your clients, how are they measuring what you're doing? Because you could be missing out on something. I think loads of branding agencies are losing out to loads of other branding agencies because they haven't got digitally minded, experience-led people in their businesses.
Yep.
Because those two worlds are really, there's an intersection there that's really obvious.
Correct, yeah.
Same thing within creative agencies. Social, you know, it's old school now to say, have you got a social offering within your creative agency? But again, like, how much do you invest in that thing, or are you trying to keep that at the end of the deck to go, oh, and by the way, here's the TikTok idea?
You know? That's again, like, fundamentals though, and I don't necessarily like this book,
okay,
or admire all the stuff in it, but how brands grow is why we are all here, right? That's a, I'm not quoting Byron Sharp, but the title of his book, We Are All Here to Help Brands Grow. That gives you license to really understand what it is that enables your 5% swing,
yeah,
to be defendable, defensible,
yeah,
attractive to the client, like what's going to push them to the point where they can make a decision that they might not have made without you. And then that's invisible influence, right? It's not about the fee for the role. It's the invisible influence and the impact on the relationship. Like that's it, this is still a relationship-oriented place. Yeah. It must be.
Yeah.
That's how, you know, humans work with humans. Like B2B agencies, like, well, no, because IBM is not making the decision institutionally. A human being in IBM is making that decision, or in a government. Like, it's still about human-to-human interaction, human-to-human relationships, and the humans that can understand the world around them and all the things in it, all the things impacting the world, all the routes to market, all the channels, all the disciplines. Those are powerful brains.
Yeah. Toby, thank you so much. I've absolutely loved this. You've answered my last question. So now I'm sat here going...
Was that the crystal ball question?
Well, no, it was the 21-year-old Toby question.
Oh, right.
That was where I normally finish and go, if he was standing here, what would you say? And you've given some brilliant advice.
Yeah.
So I want to say thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Is there anything you'd like to finish on, or anything that you'd like to ask me?
Oh, rat or fish?
Do I look like
a rat?
Do you look like a rat or a fish?
Can only be one answer, because obviously rats
you don't want to say rat. fish. You're a beautiful fish.
Cheers.
Thank you so much, man. Cheers. Appreciate it.
Yeah.